this moves us on to the reports portion of our evening here, and we will hand it over to Superintendent Hutchins for the Public Hospital District.
Okay, for November, we had revenue of $99,236.77 for the whole year. We're 66% of our budget projections on that. Expenses were $21,826, and we are only 65% use of our expenses out of the 93, so we're well under our expenses. Our cash right now is sitting at $710,210. And with the end of November, our property taxes are all caught up and ahead. We picked up 40% more this November than last November, and we're up 20% for the year. So we should not have any problems finishing the year with a good property tax revenue. I talked to the treasurer's office, and they are watching next year very closely. And we'll work with the community as need be if people are having problems with their taxes, but they hope to work on that as a case-by-case basis and ahead of time. So right now we look good on that front. And you all have the revenue reports and your expense reports. They still are not fixed. The revenue and expense fund report, that is like almost my favorite report, but it's still reporting our expenses double. So Eden is having a hard time figuring out what's happening. But our revenue reports and our expense reports separately are all fine and correct. So we'll just wait for that other one. It's just a good report that we don't have right now to look at with just specifics on revenues and expenses all together. Does anyone have any questions on the reports? No? Kyle?
I did. I had a quick one. Did I see that correctly on the, let's see. In the revenue detail report, that our year-to-date revenues from property tax are up 20%?
Yes.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I mean, monthly, 40% in 1 month might be one thing because it's such a smaller amount, but on an annual basis. Yeah. Why is that?
I'm not sure. They all caught up in November, so it looked like anybody that was having a struggle to pay or hadn't paid yet or what, and it all came in and was fixed in November. So we'll see. It could be even out, in December. Maybe some of the mortgage companies went ahead and paid the rest of the year, taxes early or something. So we'll look at it at the end of the year. Also, but it shouldn't be a negative or anything. But I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So Pam, is 20% up for the month of November against November 2019? Is what you're saying?
It's 40% up for the month.
Last November it was $70,000+, and this year it was $99,000 or something. Yeah. So 40% up and just in the month of November, and for the year with that big jump, we're up 20%. So I said, could even out, by the end of the year. We'll check it next month.
Thank you.
Okay, if no questions on that, the operations, we are, we finished our big month of November was the push that we have to get all our budgets done and approved and to the county. We did that. So that was a lot of our time was spent on that. The HRSA grant, the care coordination grant, there we spent some time trying to hire the appropriate hub coordinator, and we did that with the hiring of Kyle Davies for that position. And he's already started off well and talking to a lot of our other agencies and stuff to get input on that. And he offices here in the hospital district office, and there is a wall here that has lots of post-it notes on it that shows a kind of like a hub, he's the hub coordinator, of different things that that they're working on and concentrating on and getting agency things. And so it's really refreshing and exciting to come in and see all the work that's being done on that. And our first meeting in January, that's January 5th, on the care coordination grant for all the partners and things. So that will be a really good kickoff meeting. And we should, start strong in January for that grant. The planning grant is a little bit behind because we got that notification later. Ann Presson is going to be the project director on that grant. So it's a kickoff meeting tomorrow for that grant. So the next, there should be a corresponding meeting with all the partners in January also. So that one is taking place too. And that really is a help for having Orcas and Lopez come into the long-term care conversation and all, and it kind of really gives them a platform to work with San Juan Island and have whole county's needs looked at. So that's exciting, and that's going to be a regular happening. And then the auditors here, well, they're not here. The auditors usually are here for their two-week audit for financial reporting in 2019, but because of COVID, it's a virtual kind of thing. So I spend a lot of time answering questions and scanning documents because usually they're looking at them here. But so I've been doing that. It started last Monday, like I say, Commissioner Lindstrom will be talking to them tomorrow as a commissioner that they asked some standard questions for the audit. So she'll report back to you on that. And so far, it's just the usual audit. We will find out more things towards the end, and they'll do the usual exit conference, and you'll get notification for that, and there'll be papers for that. So that's about it for the operations. We're now slowing down to the end of the year. Most people are starting to take off and all, so there probably won't be a lot happening between now and the first part of the year. But come right after New Year's, January, usually a very, very busy month. Revamping and everybody jumping in and starting off on a new year, and hopefully we'll have a much better 2021 and get the COVID pandemic under control and start off on a new normal. So I wish everybody a happy holiday season. Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. I had a question about the HRSA project. Mm-hmm. I understand really that it's really just begin in its very beginning stages, and I'm just wondering, like, how are we reporting the success of this project, or what how do we measure what's happening, and what sort of oversight do you anticipate the Public Hospital District Board needs to have through this project? I'm just curious because it is great to see things on a wall, and it gives you a sense that you know, ideas are happening. But you know, and I you know, right now what I know is who's been hired for what and who's getting paid what. But when do we get to see or hear about something that's measurable?
Well, that will take place when they start having the monthly meetings, and there are the first reports that have to be turned in to HRSA. They're called PIMC reports, and then I will be doing, of course, the financial reports to show how much money is being spent. And then the monthly meetings that we have with the partners, you know, more will come out then, and how we're going to measure that and show that every reporting period.
Probably until the community health workers are hired, we won't have any outcomes, because we won't be seeing clients yet. So once the healthcare workers are hired and trained, then they'll be seeing clients, and then we'll have some. And I think there's measurements listed in the grant, right, Pam? I think there are ways that things that are reported start to get reported once clients are being seen.
So those will be revealed and more, and probably Evan will talk about those things that first meeting in January, on how that's going to be, a lot of that will be structured and how that's going to happen.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything further for Superintendent Hutchins?
I still have any questions.
If not, we'll move on to San Juan Island Emergency Medical Services monthly report. Administrator Butler.
All right. So you guys all have my written report. It's on our website as well. I thought that I would just talk a little bit about what I'm thinking about and where we're at. And I do try to make an effort to talk to all of you, but sometimes it's used to kind of think globally a little bit. So some concerns, revenue is down. I know that, you know, October, November were really good months. I mean, the property tax receipts were good. It makes our numbers look good. But ambulance transport fees are pretty down for the year. GEMT funding is down for the year significantly. And those are concerns. Our cash holdings are strong. But we certainly should not be overconfident in our finances. I'm also concerned about shift hours. In March, we moved to sort of a volunteer shifting model to try to deal with the COVID crisis. One of the reasons we do this is when you're dealing with COVID patients, it helps to sort of be able to compartmentalize, right? So for instance, the front of the ambulance is, we try to keep that a cold zone. It's very hard to it's very hard to clean the front of an ambulance. You've got cloth seats and stuff, and we've ordered seat covers, which you can clean more easily. But the best thing to do is to just not let anyone in the front who may be contaminated or exposed to COVID. And so you try to keep just the box in the back as the hot zone. And that presents staffing challenges, because the person driving your ambulance can't then provide patient care. And so these volunteer shifts also allow us to get the ambulance out much more quickly. Lights and sirens typically require two people on the rig. And so I am concerned about our shifting hours have gone down since March, April, May. They've been declining since the summer. So we're working on finding ways to stabilize our volunteer program, figuring out what incentivizes people, why they want to be there, how we can make them want to be a part of what we're doing. And so that's one of the things I'm concerned about and working on and on my mind. Other things that I'm working on, partner collaboration. We met with Peace Health, with the director of the ER, and with the director of nursing there. It had been a long time since a meeting of that sort of occurred. And I had intended to bring this up at the end, but they brought it up on their own. They're like, you know, this was great. Let's do this regularly. And we plan to. And we're trying to establish those sorts of relationships with our partners. And of course, it's not terribly useful unless you can form a connection between what people are experiencing on the ground and what you're talking about with your partners. And so you've got to open chains of communication all the way up and down the chain of command. And so that means leaning on our officers, on our lieutenants, on making sure we get regular feedback and communication so that we can then talk to our partners. We are working, we've got a number of operational things to try to hone our operations. We've installed, as of this week, installed cameras on Big Red, a Big Red ambulance that you see. All other ones are white. That's our COVID ambulance, the one we use for COVID response. That ambulance now you can see 360 degrees around the vehicle. When our fleet manager was working on it today, he literally pulled it in sideways, which you would think would not be possible to do. I was joking. He's like, oh, man, you took out that wall and then pulled in and put that wall back up really fast. Like, it was pretty amazing. He was, like, perpendicular to the bay, inside the bay, so we work on it because of the rain outside. And that's possible because of these cameras. And that is something we put in that capital improvement plan that Pam presented in the fall. And that those upgrades are meaningful and helpful. We're working on getting headsets so that people in the back can communicate with people in the front. It's very hard to hear. It's one of the downsides of compartmentalizing the front from the back. We've got our EMTs logging at shift change now in Microsoft Teams. So they're leaving notes for what they're doing and what they worked on and issues they may have come across during their shift. This promotes communications across shift. When an EMT ends their shift, they have a communication with the person coming on. But what tends to happen is maybe there's a medical call and they're running out the door and that communication is not as extensive as it needs to be. Or maybe two shifts later, that communication just kind of gets smaller and smaller. So on Monday, you know, they tell the next person on that there is a contractor coming to work on something on Friday. By the time you get to Friday, that message may or may not get to the right person. And so this daily logging is a routine thing in ambulance services. It's something that Carl had worked to implement in the past, but it was not fully implemented. So now we are doing that, and it's being done regularly. I'm following up on that. We're also working on we've opened up our schedule for next year, and we're working on resolving some scheduling dilemmas for 2021. Our collective bargaining agreement is complete. It will be sent off to the union tomorrow, and we'll see what their response is. Community paramedicine, we've talked about launching this program using volunteers. That program should be launched in January. And as you know, one of the challenges we have is we would love to hire a second full-time employee, but we don't know what the reimbursement model looks like. You don't want to hire an EMT when it turns out you can only get reimbursed if you use a nurse. And so in the meanwhile, we're going to use volunteers. Lainey and Peggy are working to develop some orientation training, job description. That's in a pretty, it's moving towards a pretty advanced state of readiness, and the board already approved funding. And so we're hoping to launch that next month. There are some pay issues that need worked out and that sort of thing, but we're getting very close. So I think that is a pretty good summary of kind of things that I've been dealing with, and things I'm thinking about, things I'm concerned about, things I'm pleased about. Anybody have any questions?
I've got a question, and there may be a simple answer, but I noticed in the report about the operations, it looks like our ambulance runs are down 9% for the year. Is that right? Or year to date at this point?
That is correct. But if you'll notice in your board reports, the last few months, last month, it was down 10% over the year. The month before that, it was down maybe 12% over the year. And that's because our call volume is stabilizing. Normally, yeah, you see an increase in call volume each year. Historically, we've seen 10 to 20% per year. And so this year, we sit at this point in time, we're at 10% call volume decrease, but the trend is up. And so I'm anticipating that 2021 will be essentially a mirror of 2019. That it'll be like a more, you know, we will not see decreased call volume. And then I would anticipate the calls would start to go up again like normal. And it is an issue if people delay calling 911 far too long, and we see sort of more serious cases as a result. And last week we put out a press release telling people, you know, don't be afraid to call EMS. We, you know, they will ask you screening questions when you talk to dispatch, but that's not to determine whether we come or not. It's to determine what precautions we need to take. And we are taking regular precautions. And our people are taking care of whoever needs us. And we're trying to get that message out to people. Does that answer your question? Maybe a little longer than you intended.
Well, it answered. That was question one. Question two, I was looking to compare that a little bit with the recovery for that ground emergency medical transport, where it looks like we're down about 40%, maybe year over year, right? We've recovered a little over 51% this year, or received, I mean, based on our budget. And so do you anticipate if the call volume is increasing that the GMT returns will also increase? Because I know that there is a lag in that one as well. Because we're off by quite a bit, as you mentioned
earlier. There's two. Yeah, no, and that's a good question. There's really two things going on there. Number one is the overall decline in call volume for the year. Number two is the much, much more precipitous overall call volume drop for Medicaid patients. We are, while our overall calls are down maybe 10% for the year at this point, our Medicaid calls are down 40% or more. And the GEMT program is a Medicaid subsidy program. And so that's really the reason why we're getting hit so hard. And then additionally, as we've discussed, the calculation to determine the formula for the cost per run was off. Because last year the sale of the building was calculated when it should not have been. And so we've been significantly overpaid for this year. And so we're going to have to pay back $50,000-odd, which is not great. But to kind of circle back to your question.
So our adjusted estimate actually incorporates that mistaken assumption as well, probably, right? And is inflated upward more than it should be?
Our adjusted estimate from the fall revised budget is not adequately pessimistic.
Also, I think Sally mentioned there's been some sort of also delay in the GMT reimbursement as well. It's been taking longer than previously.
There have definitely been delays. But near as I can tell, that is not the reason why our revenue is low on GEMT. At this point, we cannot count on GEMT as being a large source of revenue. And so, yeah, it's a concern.
Well, I hope the bigger concern for me is that I hope there are people who aren't for some reason declining to use that service as well, right? Because there's a disparity in the different types of calls going out. So I hope people are using it if they need it.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, financially, we are okay. It certainly puts some stress on us. But frankly, we're dealing with much less financial stress than most public agencies right now. And so we can consider ourselves fortunate, but we should not feel that we can be blasé or overconfident. And we do have large expenditures coming down the line. We did order that ambulance, which we really need and which we're very excited about. But that, you know, that's going to take, you know, money right out. I mean, that's significant. The good news is we are now, because of our capital improvement plan, which Pam presented to you over the fall, we now have a plan to set aside money every year. And so we won't be in a situation where we need to spend $400,000 in a year and we have to take it out of our general fund budget. We will set aside money each year to our reserve fund, and it can be a consistent amount over the next 6 or 7 years, and it's much, much more manageable. I feel our finances are okay, but we should be worried about the revenue streams. But there's not necessarily a lot we can do about that. We have talked about raising our billing, particularly for ALS calls, but we turned out to have very, very little room on that. The most we expect we could generate would be maybe $20,000. I mean, it's not really, it's enough to do, but it's not enough to make a huge difference for your budget. The problem is many, you know, when you go to Medicaid or Medicare, we bill, say, I think it's $1,350 for BLS or ALS calls. And it doesn't really matter which is sort of weird, which is why we're looking at raising the ALS rates. But when you go out to actually billing on the ground, when you get a bill, you know, your insurance disallows a large portion of that if you have Medicare or Medicaid. And so you're not actually even collecting even a significant part of that amount. So it just kind of is what it is. And of course, we don't bill anything out of pocket to district residents or taxpayers, and nor do we plan to, nor do we have any need to. But it's something we should be attentive to, meaning attentive to our revenue stream.
Well, ironically, if we create a stronger mobile integrated health program or paramedicine program, we are preventing clients from using EMS services, is what we want to do, overuse EMS services. But at the same time, then it's there's fewer calls, which is sort of an irony. But like I was thinking when you said runs were down, I thought of this one client who died 6 months ago, and she was responsible for, I swear, 15% of the calls, at least, maybe 20. You know, I mean, seriously, a Medicaid client. So we're preventing that when Lainey goes out. Lainey has a lot of Medicaid clients she sees with paramedicine, too. So anyway, that's an irony, but something we want to continue to do, but we also want people to use the services when they need to.
Yeah, financially, our community paramedicine program is, you know, it's financially not necessarily good for us, but it creates better outcomes for patients, and we can afford to do it, and we're very supportive of it. We want people to have the care they need, but it is true that reducing the number of Medicaid calls does reduce revenue for us. It just sort of is what it is. We're still all very supportive of community paramedicine, but that is true.
Well, there needs to be state and federal advocacy to make it so that paramedicine programs get funded somehow through these programs, because they are helping to lower the costs for Medicare and for Medicaid. But right now, there's not that support at the legislative level. So that's something we could work on, too.
Sorry, Commissioner Lauren, you want to say something, then I'll say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm very comfortable with preventing later more severe emergency medical needs if we can do that. It's, and we'll adjust accordingly. Let's make people as healthy and as we can.
Yeah, it's what we're here for. I mean, community paramedicine in many places was kind of an answer to overcrowded ERs, you know, and stretched ambulance services. If you're having calls all day and your ER is stuffed to the brim, then you either have to expand facilities, buy ambulances, hire new staff, and that's expensive. So community paramedicine is a cost-saving program in that context. But that's not remotely our context here. Our context here is low call volume and empty ERs oftentimes. And so, I mean, from a financial perspective, it's not why we do it, right? But, you know, the outcomes for our patients, like Commissioner Loring says, is everything. And we're a taxpayer-funded organization, and you know, our intention is to give people great care and to not need to go through the trauma of an ambulance ride to the hospital. And Lainey does a fantastic job. It raises the question, how do we track the impact of community paramedicine? It's something we've talked about, and I don't actually have an answer for that. I mean, it is possible that this year's community paramedicine program has been so good that it's cut our Medicaid calls. But what makes this year different from last year, right? There's no way to tease that out. It would basically imply that there was some huge change this year to our community paramedicine program that was super successful. So how you measure the success of community paramedicine is an open question. I really just don't know. I mean, the bottom line to me is, I can't tell you how many times people come to me and say, Lainey Volk makes such a difference. She makes such a difference to people in need. And that to me is how I measure the success of community paramedicine, that Lainey is perhaps more than anybody else, and not to like minimize anybody else's contributions, but you know, perhaps more than anything else is the face of EMS in our community that shows that we are making a difference every day caring for the most vulnerable. It's a program I'm really proud of. It's a program we should all be really proud of.
Right. And I would think that it's not that it's changed that as much this year, but Medicaid clients have gone down, I feel like significantly declined quicker this year and have gone to facilities, have gone to live closer to their children, have died, have been moved to facilities because they didn't have the neighborhood support anymore and the community support that they had coming in, and they were utilizing by, you know, being able to be out in the community. Everybody's been isolated, and so people's ability to function at home has been significantly impaired. But we're getting philosophical. It's fun, but
it is late.
We lost our sprint. We're definitely back at the marathon stage with our meetings, which is awesome. It's fine, but
I'm happy to answer anymore.
Because it's so interesting to me, but I'm an INFP or whatever, so I like to talk about philosophical stuff, but I should call Nathan myself.
Happy to talk anytime.
It's great. We're grateful for our program, and we hope we can keep growing it. Does anyone have any further questions for Nathan? Silence. Okay. If that's it, thank you, Nathan, for everything. And audience participation, do we have anyone left?
We've got a couple staff members and a caller. Would anyone like to comment?
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
We can hear you.
Okay. This is Richard Grout. I have a question. I had to step away while you were discussing your list of absolutes or maybes, whatever you wound up calling them. And I didn't get back until you were in your executive session. So my question is, what did you decide on that list? Is it in fact a list of absolutes, or is it something less than that?
I think we decided to prioritize the list in order of what were the most important things to us at the top, and those would clearly be absolutes, like, you know, ensuring that our employees are taken care of and ensuring that ALS care is a priority, to things that are potentially negotiable.
Okay. I would make a comment. I was very fond of Commissioner Clary's analogy to a marriage. And my observation would be that you are entering into a potential relationship with someone, with another party that has shown you that they have the capacity to be unreliable and untrustworthy. And I would think that going into that kind of a situation, you would want a prenuptial agreement, to continue with his analogy. In my working life, I was involved in hundreds of negotiations. We never went into a negotiation without knowing what our bottom line was. If you don't know what you absolutely need to make integration work, I think you have the very high risk, almost a certainty, that you will come away with something less than you need, and the public will be ill served by the level and quality of EMS that we get. So I would urge you to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else?
Yeah, I think our discussion did share. Oh, someone else sharing. Sorry, another. Is there another caller sharing?
I don't think so. I think that's
okay. I was just going to say we did come away with some absolutes. And I think that document is going to be on our website in the near future, so available to the public.
Yeah, I can put that up there, although I will say I'm not totally sure the order of priorities. We didn't spend a ton of time on that. The only one that I heard was a low priority was the size of the board. But it's still merited being on the list as a high priority. I didn't hear any other lower priority items. So if the commissioner feels that needs to clarify, we can talk about that, or I can send out the list and you can tell me your thoughts.
I could have been speaking out of term in terms of the way it was listed, but please do send that out for the final review for everyone, and then we can look publicly.
Well, I could be wrong.
I could be too.
Okay. I'll send out that list to you, commissioners, and you can reply to me if there's something substantially off about it.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Thank you. And if we're done with audience participation, and we just allow commissioner comments at this time. And in light of no commissioner comments, I would just say, everybody, thank you for all your hard work. And we appreciate everyone at EMS taking care of our community, and everybody stay safe and stay healthy, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to everybody
else.
Yes.
Enjoy. Thank you all.
And thank you all, everybody who came and attended and listened and spent your evening with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So much entertainment.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Oh, can you state the time, Commissioner Lynch?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. It's 8:12 p.m. We're adjourning the regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1. And Nathan, thank you for always keeping me on track.
Thank you.
It's a challenging job.